of home, family, friends, civilian life, daily putting their lives on the line to give us the simple opportunity of enjoying those comforts they so nobly sacrificed. That is something that I do not take lightly. The Veterans Plate program is a small but an effective way that we can communicate our honor and respect for the veterans that have served and what they deserve. When I drive down the road and I see a license plate designating a vehicle as a veteran's vehicle, I am struck with a sense of pride for what these men and women have done for our state and our country. This is a very healthy thing, and I believe it should be encouraged. House Bill 2914 is but an extension of the Veterans License Plate Program and would simply allow a widow or widower of a veteran to keep the special license plate as the vehicle that has been issued. I believe that this is a very simple way that we can continue to honor the incredible sacrifices that others have made for us, even after they have passed on. And just another quick anecdote. In January, I had the honor and the privilege of going to Arlington National Cemetery. I attended that with the speaker and two other members of the legislature. And we had the honor to be involved in the ceremony of laying a wreath at the tomb of an unknown soldier. And I was struck with such an awe of the place, an awe of the sacrifice that so many men and women have given their lives so that we can be free. And it's a feeling that none of us should take for granted. And I would encourage you to vote for this bill. I think it's just it's a simple little bill. I might think, well, it's a kind of a nothing bill, but really it is. It's something that I think we can do to honor those veterans who have so nobly served our state and our country. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Starr. Do we have any questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Representative, I would like to ask you a question.
Oh, not going to get away, huh?
You were quick, but no. Just to clarify for me, when it says retain registration plates, this means one can continue to use them on a vehicle, or are we talking about physical possession of the plates?
I believe the answer to that is both.
Oh, okay. Has there been interest in that spouses would be able to here I note that it says upon remarriage, but I imagine there may be spouses who want to retain the plates as a physical souvenir. I'm not sure. But anyway, just a question crossed my mind.
That might be a good question for DMV.
Thank you.
Can't read the writing, so I'll
We have two witnesses signed up, Ms. McDonald and Bernice. I can't read your last name. I apologize.
Alan.
Welcome.
Thank you.
If you could introduce yourself for the record, you may proceed.
Chairman Syed, gentlemen, ladies, my name is McDonald. I'm with the Veterans of Foreign Wars and with the Military Order of World Wars. We support this bill, and we support it because when we go overseas, our wives are left behind. They take care of our children, our families, our homes, and this is the least we can do for them. Therefore, we'd like to have this bill come out of the committee as a due pass. Thank you.
I am Bernice Harlan, wife of Ronald Harlan, expired October 19, 1999. And my husband had disabled and Purple Heart plates, both as well as being a veteran. One was on a motorhome and one was on the pickup. When he expired, for me to be able to use either vehicle, I had to first, it was mandatory that I turn those plates in, and then I had to purchase new plates. at a time when I was at least able, really, mentally and also financially able to get to that. And I support the license plate program. I do not wish to jeopardize the original program, as my husband Ron Harlan and Dick Light were the two who lobbied and worked so hard to get those plates. And they were the major team who worked on those plates for their creation. I, too, belong to a number of organizations, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Military Order of Purple Heart, the American Legion, and the Greater Salem Area Veterans Organization, to which I'm secretary, too. And at this time, of course, they were in full support of me, and I appreciate all the support they gave to me. But it is a cruel blow to the widow to part with these plates. They are special items to a widow or a spouse, and they were purchased and should belong to the survivor. I fail to see a benefit in the state taking them back. It is not cost effective in that the state has to pay again to have them destroyed. And of course it would be not for personal use, but strictly for a memento. So I would ask you to consider allowing the spouse, whether a wife or a husband, to keep these plates. Thank you. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Ms. Salem, your testimony this morning. Very much appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on House Bill 2914? Please come forward.
I don't need to sit down. I'll fall in. My name is Frank Hills, and I'd like for you to support this. I'm a veteran of World War II. I was in the Marine Corps in 1939 to 1946. I got discharged. I went back to Korea. I was in Korea a whole year in 1951. Then that war, I was in Korea for 17 months. But anyway, the reason I'd like for you to support this bill is, if you ever go to an Irish festival or anything, we have a float, and the women, the auxiliary, do more to keep us going than the men do. And I very seldom ever stick up for a woman, but I will. That's the truth. And I'm married, and I'd like for my wife to have my plate when I die. I think Bernice should have got Ron's plate, because he did more for the Purple Heart plate than anybody I know. He was up there almost every day getting it passed. And that's all I have to say to you. If you can, do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony and your service. Is there anyone else that wishes to have comments on the record? Kelly, do you have an inquisitive look on your face?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor with the Department of Transportation, and I'm just trying to see if I understand what we thought the meaning of the bill was, and I keep hearing a little bit of conflict as far as different meanings of retain. May retain the plates. Retain them on the vehicle and use them as registration plates, or retain them as a memento in their home? I'm having a little trouble making sure I understand. Is it both, or one or the other? Or I just want to make sure we do the bill right when this is all said and done.
Well, I'd like it to be both, that they could either leave it on the vehicle and drive it, or in the event that they sell that vehicle, that they
then
can
they retain, get to
keep them. They can keep the
plate. The word retain doesn't necessarily mean use on the vehicle, as far as, you know, I mean, I'm just worried that, you know, later on somebody's going to read this and go, well, retain just means get to keep them, not necessarily use them as registration plates. And I want to make sure it's very clear with what the intent is. And you know, if somebody were to challenge it, they'll just look at the language and they won't go listen to legislative record. And so I'm just wondering if you want to change this at all, be more specific, you know. That would be my suggestion at all.
To be safe then. So.
Yes, that's run out, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Are there any questions to the committee?
Just a clarification, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. I guess for Kelly, the $5 surcharge is a one-time surcharge, no? It's every time the registration is renewed?
Mr. Chair, members in Rosenbaum, it's actually a $10 surcharge total, and it's first time and each time renewed, 2 years every 2 years. And then the money goes off towards whatever the group is designated. I think with the Purple Heart plates, the money goes off to the veterans home up in the Dalles.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So just to follow up, mm-hmm. clarification, so we would be, I mean, if people wanted to renew these plates, the surviving spouse would be able to just renew them the way they would have been.
Mr. Chair, members of Rosenbaum, that's what I'm thinking that the committee is wanting to do, but I'm not sure that that's exactly what the bill says, because I was reading retain just to mean retain, well, much like you all do with your elected official plates when your term is up. You get to retain those plates as a souvenir or a memento, and, you know, retain to me would mean that, whereas use on a vehicle is something a little different than just the word retain. It could be read both ways, but I'd like it to be real clear, because I think that what the chair is suggesting is very reasonable.
Right. Yeah, we will have amendments drafted to the bill.
Okay.
They make it very clear and specific.
Yeah.
We're clear.
You
got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no special parking privileges with these plates other than the handicapped one, or is there? It doesn't come into play, does it?
Right. Mr. Chair, Members of Honor, there is no special parking privileges with these plates. Even the disabled veteran plate does not grant parking privileges. It's the recognition of service to country. There's many disabilities that would qualify you for the plate that wouldn't qualify you for the parking privileges. So a couple of years ago, the veterans groups came forth and really asked for that to be removed from the disabled veterans plate so that all disabled veterans could get those plates. And then if they need the parking privileges, they get the placard that hangs in the window.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Kelly, very much.
Yes.
And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2914. We'll have amendments drafted and bring that bill back as quickly as we can get them out. Next, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2306. And Mr. Chastain. And John, do you want to talk about the amendments that we have drafted? This is a bill that we heard earlier. Committee members, and there were some amendments that we had drafted on the bill. Can you go over those, John?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee. House Bill 2306, as you know, we've heard before, and we drafted an amendment. It was just a brief amendment that makes it unlawful for passengers on publicly owned transit systems to consume alcohol from an open container. This is House Bill 2306, which is known as the open container law. Give you a fiscal update on the Dash 1 amendment. We just got it before because our amendments are late arriving. There is no fiscal impact on the Dash 1 amendment. And I would assume, even though we do not have the statement on, there was no revenue impact on the original bill. Suspect there will not be one also on the Dash 1. We're waiting for that.
Right, Mr. Chastain.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Chastain. I'm a sergeant with the Oregon State Police, assigned out of our Patrol Services Division here in Salem. And I'm here today, and I'll make my testimony very brief, that we support this bill. It does fix the loophole that is currently in the law that allows operators of the vehicle specified to actually possess and consume from an open container. And the amendments to the bill do not, do not cause us any problem either. I know that the public transit system people are really working hard to try to clean up some of the incidents that take place on these type of vehicles, and again, we have no heartburn with that either. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Great. Any questions, Mr. Chastain? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else want to testify on the bill? That will close the public hearing on House Bill 2306, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2306. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, move down to the Dash 1 amendment.
Madam Chairman, let's move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2306. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin.
Move 2306 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin has moved House Bill 2306 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? I don't see any. Kate, will you call the roll, please?
Brown.
Aye.
Dublin.
Aye.
Crock.
Aye.
Murphy.
Aye.
Nelson.
Excused.
Aye.
Bridger.
Excused.
Donner.
Aye.
Stock.
Aye. Bill passes. Senator Donner.
I move we put it on the consent calendar.
Senator Donner has moved we place 2306 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? In none, so ordered. Close the work session, House Bill 2306. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2818. John, will you give us an update on the bill?
Yes, Chair Starr, members of the committee. House Bill 2818 allows the multi-state highway transportation agreement to be extended. This original agreement was authorized into Oregon statute in 1983. This coalition of states was first formed in 1981. There is a notice of potential revenue impact. I do not have a statement from them yet. And I spoke with Fiscal today. On the face of it, they don't anticipate it to be a problem or a major issue.
Very good. Thank you. Bob Russell.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Russell. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Trucking Association. As Mr. Leon indicated, the Multi-State Highway Transportation Agreement was formed in 1981. Its original purpose was to promote uniform size and weight regulations for the trucking industry throughout the West. Initially, there were 11 states that participated. Since that time, California has dropped out, and there are only 10 states remaining. Participants in MHTA are two legislators from each state, one from the House, one from the Senate. The principal administrator that is responsible for the truck regulatory programs in each state and the trucking industry. In 1991, Congress passed the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act, which we normally refer to as ICE-T. Contained in that piece of legislation was a freeze on truck size and weights throughout the nation. That freeze is still in effect, and there is no move, at least at this point, to remove that freeze. As a result of it, the original purpose of MHTA is no longer valid, or hasn't been for some time. As with many of these kinds of things, discussions have been broad-ranging from the very beginning. Last year, a good senator from the state of Idaho pointed out that his state's enabling legislation limited the discussions of MHTA to only size and weight issues. Former Oregon State Representative Larry Wells was president of MHTA last year, and to address the situation, what he did was he hired staff from the National Council of State Legislators, or NCSL, to review the bylaws and the enabling legislation in each of the states participating in MHTA. In December of last year, MHTA amended its bylaws to expand the scope of permissible discussions at MHTA meetings. And they also redrafted each state's enabling legislation. And what you have before you in House Bill 2818 are the results of that effort. And essentially what it does is it says that MHTA can discuss any issues of importance to our highway transportation system in the West. So far, Utah and Wyoming have passed this legislation. It's pending in New Mexico, Arizona, and Montana, although one house has passed it each of those states. In Nevada, Idaho, Colorado, and Oregon have introduced it, but it has not yet passed a single chamber. That concludes my prepared testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Donner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How come California dropped out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I'm not sure. I wasn't participating in MHTA at that time, but my experience with California is in a lot of areas they consider themselves to be a country rather than a state, and they prefer to go it alone.
Let me quote you on that.
Please do.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Do you anticipate that the agreement on the recent, I don't know if it's NAFTA or WTO decision regarding trucks coming in from Mexico that don't meet American standards would be a type of topic that would be discussed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, absolutely. Matter of fact, MHTA at the last meeting that I attended did talk about NAFTA and talked about Mexican trucks coming in. Certainly that is a very good example of the kinds of things that we would discuss.
Good question.
Yes.
As I understand it, the group prepares recommendations for legislation and so on and so forth, but they don't have any actual decision-making authority. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, that's absolutely correct. There was a lot of legislation, quite frankly, that Representative Wells, for example, introduced in the Oregon legislature that came out of discussions at MHTA. And a lot of that legislation, rather than being promoted by MHTA in terms of uniformity through the West, were simply good ideas that had been adopted in other states that addressed problems that Oregon was experiencing. So from that standpoint, there's a tremendous benefit to this organization.
Any other questions? Thank you, Bob, very much for your testimony. We've got Doug Tindall on the line here.
Good morning, Chair Starr, members of the committee. Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. We want to put on record some concerns we have about this bill. Our concerns basically are along the lines of the opportunity to increase size and weight. The reason that we're concerned about that is that some of the things that the bill does is it deletes references to prior failed attempts to change size and weight. It deletes references to states losing federal highway funds if size and weight restrictions are changed. Somewhat of a concern to us is deletes the requirement that the committee's report be given to the Council of State Governments and Western Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. I'm not sure I understand why we want to do that. The bill establishes new areas to objectives for the agreement that establish transportation laws to meet regional economic needs, promote efficient and environmentally sound operation of vehicles, and increase productivity and reduce congestion. All three of those are admirable goals. However, all three of those can be accomplished by increasing size and weight of vehicles. Our concern about, and the bill doesn't address some of the other concerns with of our concerns of increasing size and weight.
Excuse me, Doug.
Sorry.
Whatever would be recommended out of this multi-state highway transportation agreement, wouldn't it have to be reviewed and passed by a legislature? They're not making law. They're just going to be making recommendations. Isn't that not true?
Chair Starr, I believe that is correct.
And isn't it true that most of these issues have been settled at the federal level already?
Chair Starr, another provision of this bill, and I'll address the federal issue in just a second. Another provision of this bill takes out language that promoted a national standard. And so there's some concern about how much of this would be done and promoted at the federal level. With respect to the limits at the federal level, I've attached to my testimony a letter signed by, among others, Congressman Blumenauer, opposing attempts to increase truck size and weight. The folks at ODOT that deal with people back in Washington, D.C., indicate to us that there is a move afoot to discuss vehicle size and weight again at the federal level with the changes in the chairmanships of the transportation committees at the federal level. So I guess that's sort of heightened our concern that that federal protection that you're talking about may not be there.
Well, my response is that whatever MHTA does has no legal binding authority. It just would be recommendations that the various states could adopt or not adopt as they so chose or saw fit in the legislative assembly.
I agree. That's my understanding as well, Representative Starr.
Okay. If you want to continue testimony.
To tell you why we're concerned about increased size and weight, most Oregon's bridges were designed when weight limits were 60,000 pounds as opposed to 80,000 today. Even at our current weight limits, we're starting to see structural failure.
Doug, can I just interrupt again? You're talking about things that this bill doesn't deal with. Size and weight, this bill is not about size and weight. This bill is about the MHTA and the agreement. It's not about size and weight. And if this bill is about size and weight, then you could testify that you're opposed to a bill that would increase size and weight of trucks because of the bridges for whatever reason we have in the state. Does that your testimony address what this bill talks about? I don't believe.
Representative Starr, I'm not here to oppose the bill. I just wanted to share the concerns that we had with the bill and the particular language that's added in at the end of the bill. As I said, the three objectives of the bill that are added in to establish transportation laws and regulations to meet regional economic needs, promote efficient environmentally sound operation, and increase productivity and reduce congestion. And those things in the bill, while those don't say size and weight specifically, they can all be accomplished by increasing size and weight. And so that all I'm here to do is share our concern that the bill appears to take it or has a, I shouldn't say appears to take it, it has the potential to take it in that direction. I've talked to Mr. Russell about this, and Bob says that OTA doesn't have an interest in increasing size and weight, and I certainly appreciate that. By building a multi-state agreement, however, Oregon could get leveraged if other states did have an increase in increasing size and weight as a resolution coming out of the multi-state agreement, although my reading of it is the same as yours, that it is not legally binding and would require action by the legislature to make those changes.
So you're not opposed to the bill. You're just voicing concerns the direction that it might take us potentially down the road.
Correct.
Even though we couldn't, it's non-binding, and other legislators would have to act on whatever recommendations might come out of this group.
That's correct, Representative Starr. I'm just here to express ODOT's concerns about it.
Right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Krupp.
Thank you. Doug, go Beeps, by the way. I got to say that, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Talking about bridges and talking about the Ford Bridge at Roseburg, what was that bridge originally designed for? And I know it was built in the early 60s, but when you build a bridge like that, I'm assuming that, like most engineering, you do overbuild it, you over-engineer it and overbuild it to a point that you think where the weights might exceed. You don't necessarily, you give yourself plenty of margin, in other words. What was that bridge originally built for in terms of weights?
Chair Starr, Representative Krupp, I can't tell you when you do a bridge design, you use what's called a design template for a loading. And I don't know what the AASHTO design template was at that time. I know that the legal loads were lower than they are today. But specifically what template they used, I don't know. And the second answer to the question is, I also don't know exactly what method. There's two basic methods of designing a bridge, and I don't know which method they were using, although I believe it was working stress at the time. But I can't answer your question to tell you exactly what that bridge was designed for.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you have... I mean, are the bridges that are cracking today a result of heavier loads? Have you been able to truly attribute it to that, or is it a combination of factors like earthquake rumblings who have over the years had some impact there?
Chair Star, Representative Krupp, which depends on the bridge. With respect to the Spencer Creek Bridge, we have a pretty good idea that that was an overweight load that went, unpermitted overweight load, although we can't prove it. With respect to the other types of failure that we're seeing, I can't attribute it to one specific thing. I think it is a combination of aging infrastructure, increased traffic, increased weights, some of the earth movement that we've either felt or probably happened and not even felt. So I think it's a combination of a whole bunch of those things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Just one further, it's just like clear in my mind. Size and weight restrictions on the interstates are set at the federal level. True or false?
Representative Starr, I believe that's true.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Committee members, we're kind of on hold. I'd like to move this bill today, and we're waiting to see if we get a revenue impact statement. So just set it recess here for a minute.
Do we have another bill, Mr. Chair?
We're done. This is the last
one. This is the last one. Okay.
Yeah. So if we can just... Bob?
We didn't do one.
Bob.
I'm not doing
it. I have some more questions for you.
Do we have another special zone?
Yeah, we're not moving that.
We're not. Okay.
We're not moving that bill today. Not a amendment. Have some dedicated questions for you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Russell, a couple of questions were raised by Mr. Kendall's testimony that I thought it'd be nice to have you. One is that on page 3 of the bill, the end of Article 4, it eliminates the requirement that copies of reports be made available to the Transportation Committee of the Western Conference, Council of State Governments, and the Western Association of Highway and Transportation Officials. Could you outline for us why the reporting requirement is being eliminated?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, my understanding was that in the past, MHT had never submitted reports to those particular groups, and so that they thought that the requirement was superfluous. I think that's the answer to the question.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, I wanted to ask you, I was just kind of following on the line of questioning that I had previously with Doug from ODOT. What's your take of the issues of an aging bridge infrastructure that may be experiencing additional stress loads from increased frequency and increased loading? What's your industry's take on all of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, our understanding is the interstate system, and that's really what we've been talking about, bridges around the interstate system, was originally designed to accommodate national defense. And the design loadings were significantly higher than the maximum size and weight limits that were imposed on commercial trucks at that time, because Congress wanted to be able to move tanks and things like that on the interstate system to keep our military mobile in this country. So my understanding is the interstate system was substantially overbuilt originally. My understanding also is that a lot of the problems that we are experiencing with bridges on the interstate system are because of the age of those bridges. They're getting up to 25, 30 years old, and that's pretty close to the design life of those bridges, and that primarily is the problem with the bridges.
So in your industry's estimation, these bridges are reaching a lifespan now that where they were not intended to be permanent forever bridges. They were engineered to have a particular lifespan, and that's partly why they're at the place they are in terms of some condition.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, that's absolutely my understanding.
So you don't necessarily buy the argument as an industry for what you articulated earlier to my question, that these bridges are not built for the heavy loads that are going across them today, because back then the Defense Department would have wanted heavy loads crossing them anyway.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, that's true. When we talk about size and weight, there are a number of limitations that are imposed. On the federal level, the maximum legal limit is 80,000 pounds. In Oregon, we issue annual permits up to 105,500 pounds. Some surrounding states issue permits in excess of that. We also issue single trip permits, and on many occasions, those single trip permits will be as high as 900,000 pounds or close to 1,000,000 pounds. And the interstate system was designed to accommodate those kinds of loads. Now, granted, the single trip permit loads, there aren't very many of them in comparison to the number of trucks on the highway.
Okay. Is there any reason you would believe that if we pass this bill and amend this agreement that there would be any additional cost or additional revenue to the state?
Mr. Chairman, not at all. The only cost to the state is to pay for the travel of the legislative members to the agreement, and Oregon has been one of the original participating states since 1981, so that cost has already been borne by the state of Oregon.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Dillon.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that line, in terms of the interstate system and bridges, given the amount of resources the federal government put into building the interstate system, do you see any time in the future when they want to put in the resources to rebuild those bridges?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dillon. That's an interesting question. The resources, I mean, the trend at the federal level since 1991 with ICE-T has to provide flexible funding to the states, to give the states more of a choice in how they spend the federal resources. And as far as I can tell, that trend will probably continue. So the amount of money that is coming from the federal government, the states have a great deal of latitude in how they spend that. Prior to 1991, that was not the case. Prior to 1991, the federal funds were basically earmarked for new construction or what we call modernization. But today, those federal funds can be used for a much wider variety of purposes. So you've got a combination of things and how much money is coming from the federal government and how the state chooses to spend it.
Tim Krupp has one final question.
Are there other states that are facing the similar issues of an aging infrastructure and bridge issues? In other words, do you as an industry notice worse problems in other states? And are those problems, in your view, tied to this issue of heavy weights?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, we do notice that the interstate system is aging throughout the country, quite frankly. Some of the problems that we have are more pronounced in the east than they are in the west because those portions of the interstate system were actually built prior to a number of the portions in the west. I just think generally we're seeing aging of the system.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, I just have a question about Article 4 and how the decision-making mechanism changes under this language. It looks like previously each state had one vote on this cooperating committee, and now this changes to two designated representatives from each state, each of whom would have a vote.
I believe that each state still has one vote. However, the big change in this particular section was that previously anybody that participated in the meetings were allowed to vote, and with this change, only the legislative members will be allowed to vote.
Well, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the language on lines on page 3, lines 20 and 21, each designated representative of a participating jurisdiction shall be entitled to one vote. I'm reading that as each representative has a vote and each jurisdiction has two representatives.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I stand corrected.
So a final follow-up, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. How would the designated representatives would be legislators? And how would
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, that's correct.
And how would they be determined?
Look at line 17 of page 2. Defines designated representative.
Ah. I see. Oh, I see. Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, I think we're straying away from probably what the intent of this bill is, and we get talking about the aging infrastructure in our bridges, but I think it needs to be said that they were designed for maybe for 60,000 or greater loads, but they were never designed for the volume of traffic, a particular truck traffic that's now utilizing them. And I'm not a civil engineer, but I had a little bit of experience with them. And you're continually loading and unloading those bridges at a far higher capacity than was ever intended. And it's like bending the old baling wire. You keep bending it long enough, and pretty soon it comes apart. It's not the amount of force exerted at one time, but it's in many, many, many times it has that effect.
Once again, this bill is not about size and weight restrictions.
Another question about size.
Correct. Okay. Before I leave the stand, I would like to once again invite you to our St. Patrick's Day celebration this Thursday evening and hope that you all have that on your calendars.
Great. Thank you. That would close the public hearing. Did you have a question?
No, I just...
Okay. That would close the public hearing on House Bill 2818. And we will open a work session House Bill 2818. Representative Zahner.
Chair, I move that we send House Bill 2818 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved that we pass House Bill 2818 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Dublin.
Aye.
Truck.
Aye.
Murphy.
Aye.
Nelson?
Excused.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Berger?
Excused.
Zahner?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Zahner? Have another motion?
That we put it on the, consent calendar.
Thank you. Representative Zahner has newly put House Bill 2818 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we're done with our agenda, so we're adjourned. Thank you, committee.